Accession number 19930, Reel 1.
Harry Lapidus, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Birmingham, in Warwickshire.
Which year was this?
In 1915.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family background, whether you grew up in Birmingham or not?
Yes, I grew up in the outskirts of Birmingham in a small town called Sutton Coalfield, which is in Warwickshire.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a master toolmaker, and laterly in life, he owned a public house, a big one, and ran it, had a lease on it, and ran it for a number of years until he retired.
Did you go to school in Sutton Coalfield?
Yes.
Can you remember the name of the school?
I do. It was a grammar school, and it was called Bishop Vese's Grammar School.
What kind of an education was it there?
It was the normal grammar school education, which was very good. We were a strong Christian school. We sang our national hymns every morning. We went to assembly every morning, and we were taught to be God-fearing.
Did you have ambitions whilst you were at school?
Yes, I suppose, to play sport. I was very keen on rugby and cricket, and played and ran, and I played and ran for the school on many occasions. When it was time for me to leave school and to start work, my father had ideas, and I was articled with an estate agent and surveyor for 5 years.
Was that in Sutton Coalfield?
In Birmingham.
Did you join the TA before the war?
Yes, my parents retired and went to live in North Wales. When I'd taken my intermediate, I'd only had my final to sit. I moved to North Wales with them, to Anglesey, and there I joined the Carnarvonshire and Denbighshire Yeomanry, which was a territorial regiment, recruited along the coast.
Do you remember when you joined the TA?
Not exactly the date, but it was in 1938.
Can you tell me something about your experiences pre-war in the Yeomanry, please?
There were the normal weekend drills, and perhaps two nights in the summertime, attending various lessons and instructions on how to fire and direct guns. We were a medium regiment in those days.
What did you think of the kind of training you were getting at that time?
I thought it was adequate, but the moment we had to put it into operation, then of course it wasn't. We needed to know a lot more, and or perhaps really needed to be battle hardened.
What had induced you to join TA in the first place?
Well, my father was a special constable. My family had always had something to do with service, and being a patriot, I joined.
Had you thought at that time that a war was coming?
It was pretty obvious. We could really see nothing else for it. And in fact, my unit was called up in 1938 when Mr. Chamberlain went to Munich. And then, of course, we stood down. And then the big day came on the 20th of August, 1939.
Had you, at that time, in the late 30s, taken any interest in international politics?
Yes, I've always read the newspapers. I've always tried to keep up with what's been going on.
What happened to you in August 1939?
I reported to my drill hall, which was in Bangor, North Wales, and with a toothbrush, a razor, my uniform, and I think a towel. That was all.
What happened to you there?
We were fed. We went home to sleep because we only lived, well, in those days I lived 4 miles away. And we, as I say, went home to sleep until the war actually started. And then we slept, we were issued then with the normal bedding, and we slept in the drill hall.
And then?
We immediately started route marching to harden ourselves up, and within 2 weeks we had moved to a place further along the coast called St. Asaph.
What happened to you there?
A lot more route marching, a lot more gun drill, some reinforcements of old stages from the First War. And the new intake that was just happening in the British Army. But mostly, we were all from the coast of North Wales.
Any incidents or anecdotes from that period you can recount?
Not really. We were very busy. We marched a lot. We ate a lot. We drank a lot in the pubs at night, and we knew what was coming, and within 6 weeks we were in Bristol getting ready to go to France to join the British Expeditionary Force.
Were you at that time part of a division?
No. The regiment, I think, was a part of 4th Corps.
And what was the full title of the unit again?
It was the 69th Medium Regiment Royal Artillery. We had 4.5 guns, brand new. All the equipment was brand new. So we were really ready to test ourselves out.
And what rank did you have at the time?
I was a Lance Sergeant then. I was a GPO AC, what was called. It was really aligning the guns. I wasn't in a gun detachment, but I was in actually I was in the other side of it, on the computer side of, well, not computers, computers today I suppose, but in those days it was other sort of equipment that you lined up the guns with.
And who were you responsible to? Who did you answer to at that time?
I was responsible to the commander of the battery, Major Trevor Fowkes.
What was he like?
Great man. He, although he had his foot run over, managed to march 36 miles to Dunkirk.
Can you tell me about going to France, please?
It was pretty normal. We loaded our guns, loaded our vehicles, and arrived at Le Havre, and moved up to the outskirts of Arras.
What happened there?
We then dug in. It was a hard winter. But we got below the surface and managed to dig our guns in case the Germans did invade us, which of course they never did.
How did you get on with the local French civilians?
Good. We drank in the estaminets. And in general, there was no problem.
How were the troops behaving?
As usual. Drinking, fighting, as all British troops do, but being the salt of the earth in the end.
Did they cause any problems for those in authority?
Not really, because the military police were always around. But everybody was waiting to get on with the war.
Did you see anything of the French army at that time?
No.
What kind of duties did you have at first?
The normal duties, gun drill in the daytime, plenty of route marching, the normal guard duties at night.
What were your living conditions like?
To start with, they weren't very good. But they improved because we improved them. And it was cold, but then we were used to cold. And I think that the few months before the Germans invaded Holland and Belgium were spent reasonably happily.
Did it surprise you that there was a long delay before the Germans took action?
Yes, it did. And we didn't know why.
What was morale like at the time?
Oh, it was good.
Was there ever any question of you travelling about in France to, for example, to see the Maginot Line?
No, not for me. Excuse me.
What are your next recollections?
My next recollection is sleeping in an orchard, apple or pear orchard, and very early in the morning, must have been 5 o'clock, the Germans bombed Arras, and all the flowers from the trees came down on top of us, and I began to wonder whether those trees ever bore fruit. I'm sure they didn't. Within an hour, we were on our way into Belgium. We were greeted with flowers, people cheering, jugs of wine, and everything like that.
Do you remember any of the places that you went through in Belgium?
Not to start with. I know we were going to Louvain, but the first night it was decided that we would camp up. And just when we were about to make camp, we all saw a huge plane coming over, and we thought it was one of ours. Until we suddenly saw a stick of bombs. But it was a German plane. And that was our first real insight into war. And the stick of bombs went straight across our position. Fortunately, there were no casualties. And we slept there in that position the night. The next day, we were up early. We moved towards Louvain, but stopped before we got there. And dug in our guns and went into action. And then, almost daily, we were in action from then onwards.
What did the action consist of?
Firing salvos of guns, firing onto targets, with officers going up to observation posts and trying to stop the Germans getting any further.
What was the efficiency of the unit like in action?
Good.
Did you get any incoming fire?
Yes, we did. And we had a few casualties, but not very many. I think they were more interested in the troops in front of us than in trying to knock our guns out. But we did have one very unpleasant experience. It was probably, we'd been in probably 10 or 15 days. When we had to stop firing because the Belgian army just came through our gun positions with all the Belgian troops shouting, the King of the Belgians has given up, go home, Tommy. And probably 3,000 or 4,000 of them just trooped through our guns. We were out of action for 2 hours whilst they were coming through.
Did the British troops respond in any way?
Nope, we were surprised. We didn't. No, we were surprised. We had no idea that the Belgians had given up.
Was the opinion of these Belgian civilians unanimous, or did some of them dissent?
All the Belgians were pleased to that their king had decided the war was over, as far as they were concerned, and it left us rather perplexed.
How far from Louvain were you?
I think 20 miles. From then on, the retreat started. We fired in the daytime and moved at night. The next incident was at a place called Comines, C-O-M-I-N-E-S, where we arrived in the middle of one afternoon, and there'd been no issue of cigarettes for days. The battery commander, Trevor Fowkes, asked me to go into Louvain, to go into Comines, to see if I could find cigarettes. I went in a truck with a driver and arrived in the square in Louvain to find it was deserted except for the Middlesex machine gunners, who were expecting the Germans to attack up the road at any time. We hadn't realized the Germans were so close, but we did then. A corporal in charge of the Middlesex machine gunners said that they had no cigarettes, but he had two boxes of cigars, and he would be perfectly happy if I had one, as he didn't expect to be there next morning. I went into the town hall and saw the sergeant of the Middlesex, and he showed me on a map how the Germans had encircled us at Dunkirk. And that was it. I went down into this square. There's a road opposite, stretching perhaps, you could say, half a mile down the road. And coming up the road was a truck. When the truck arrived in the square, there were two badly wounded men in it. One was the driver, and the other the passenger. I stopped to see if I could do something for them. The passenger was very badly wounded, in his ankle. Fortunately, an ambulance came past, and we were able to put him in the ambulance. I turned back to look at the driver, and unfortunately my driver of my truck thought I was aboard and took off without me. So I was stranded in the middle of Comines, and it was just getting dark. There were quizzling snipers firing, and a pretty dangerous place to be.
How did you know they were quizzling snipers?
The sergeant in the town hall told me that they'd had that before. Immediately it became dark, the sniper started. I started to make my way back towards where I thought my battery was, but walked onto the end of a bayonet from a British soldier who told me they were an anti-tank regiment. I went through to see his battery commander, and he invited me to stay the night with him, as it was then dark. He told me they were going into action the next morning, which they did, but the Germans were really looking to go further up and to go over the bridge. So there wasn't a battle with the anti-tank regiment and the Germans just at that point, although some shots were exchanged. The battery commander lent me his motorcyclist to see if I could find my own guns, and he took me off, and after about half an hour, and there was very heavy traffic, it was then obvious that either the rear guard were moving up and the rest of the BEF were trying to get to the coast. I found one of my unit. I thought he was one of my unit, but he was one from the other battery, who told me that there was a broken down gun in a farmhouse. The motorcyclist went. I went with the gunner, and we found the broken down gun with a Scammel, which was its vehicle. And they'd been left since the previous afternoon and had no food. And this really impressed upon me the desperate situation that we were in. Everybody wanted to leave the gun and take the Scammel, but for some reason I thought we should take the gun as well, as it was part of the equipment. And so we limbered it up and started. But we were badly bombed and machine gunned, and still didn't leave the gun. Eventually we managed to find our position, and the gun was delivered back. Unfortunately, within 4 days, that was blown up as well. We destroyed it ourselves. All our vehicles and guns were then dumped and burned. The guns were fired the last shot so that the barrel would come off its holding and go into the ground behind. All the vehicles were burned, and we started to walk 36, 40 miles to Dunkirk. Passing on the way, the rear guard, which we must never forget, who were taking their places. The 2nd Battalion Welsh Guards were in the rear guard, and one of my gunners had his brother in the Welsh Guards, and he was able to find him, and he never saw him again. He was able to find him and say goodbye to him, and he never got back. We marched and got through to Japan, turned left, marched up the beach, to the mass of people who were there, the mass of soldiers.
What was the scene like on the beaches? Oh.
Well, we were so massed, and German bombers were coming up and down, dropping their bombs, that it was just luck where you were. But as the bombs dropped, you were lifted right off the sand. And when you dropped back, you didn't have any breath left in you. But they went. We went down to the beach and bathed our feet. But one unfortunate incident, we had twins in our battery. One of them went down the beach to bathe his feet, and the other stayed further up the sand. And the one who went to bathe his feet was hit by a bomb and killed. That was an unfortunate thing that happened then. There was a very fine naval captain who was in a very prominent position on the beach, who was directing us, so many down the mole, which was being bombed and being repaired again by the engineers, and so many into the sea. The people who were going into the sea didn't like it, because in those days people didn't swim very well, and with their serge uniforms, the moment they got into the sea, they went down. Although they were being, and everybody had to carry a rifle. Although they were being helped, often people couldn't help them with heavy serge uniforms. So a number were drowned, and a number got to the boats. The mole itself, there were holes in it which people vaulted over, but everybody had to discharge the 303 bullets, and it was almost impossible to walk. There were so many bullets on the mole which made you slip. I managed to get off the end of the mole and got on board a ship, which was a cross-channel ship, in actual fact. I can't remember the name of it. And from there, I got back to Dunkirk.
Got back to England?
Yes, to Dover, I'm sorry. From Dunkirk to Dover.
Was it easy to get off the mole onto the ship?
No, very difficult. But we all did, we all helped each other. And the sailors were there.
What condition was the mole in?
Oh, terrible. It was been very badly hit by German bombing. I think probably if the mole could have been kept in good condition, there would have been more escaped. But I think it was probably the greatest victory, although it's put down as a defeat, that Britain has ever had, because that 300,000 men were the cream of the British Army. They were the regulars and the TA. And if those men had been captured, there wouldn't have been a home in Britain that didn't have a prisoner of war. And one doesn't know, but if Hitler had sued for peace then and said he wouldn't interfere with Britain, what would we have said? But it was different. 300,000 of us got back, and they were the nucleus of the new armies.
Do you remember the name of the ship that took you back?
Was it the Canterbury? I couldn't be sure.
Was it a warship or a civilian?
No, it was a cross-channel ship. But of course the sea was full of smaller ships at the time.
What were conditions like in the ship?
Oh, but everybody was sleeping on top of each other. It's so packed. Everybody was tired. Nobody had slept for days. And I think the moment we got on the ship and it moved, everybody just lay down where they were. We had our rifles, of course.
Did you sleep throughout the voyage?
I slept until I got to Dover. But the first thing I remember was someone giving me a cup of tea. A lady. WVS.
How welcome was that?
Very. And they gave us a bun.
Was there any organization at Dover?
Oh, yes. The WVS were out in their hundreds. It was very well organized. The trains were there. We were squashed in the trains, but nobody minded that. And we went to Lark Hill, and the tents were all ready for us. And I think everybody lay down for 10 or 12 hours.
Have you any idea of the date you arrived at Dover?
Yes. It was 2 days before my 25th birthday, which was the 2nd of June.